Thank you all, as Francis said, for getting out of bed and showing up this morning. It's no small feat, I think, for those of us who struggle daily with the issues of our lives to find the energy to get dressed, to show up for anything more than what we are absolutely required to do. And for some of us, we wouldn't miss this for the world. This is our home, our community, our place. For others, visiting for the first time, a certain amount of courage, a great deal of courage, is required to show up and walk through the doors. And I'm always reminded of those I have met who have driven by a church three or four times before they actually pull into the parking lot and walk in the door. It is, as I said before, a distinct honor to be here again, to see your smiling faces in this beautiful sunlit room. I reflected on what I wanted to say today for a great deal of the spring. I thought a lot about what kind of message I might be able to bring that we could hear together and resonate with. And it hit upon me that the story of the Wizard of Oz is as good a place to start as any. Like the Kansas tornado that swept up Dorothy's home, Hurricane Katrina came and nearly destroyed the great city of New Orleans. And then, of course, came the further destruction of the federal government's ineptitude amidst racism and poverty. And unlike Dorothy's world, where the house dropped down into a magical land over the rainbow, our church, the Unitarian Universalist Community Church of New Orleans, had to bravely build again. They were completely flooded. They had to dream a new dream, a bigger dream, a better dream. And after losing half their congregation to the storm, who either moved away, some of whom died, untold years of permits, they almost lost their minister, my good friend and colleague, Jim Vanderweel. They found their way through the forest, across the poppies, and knocked on those great big doors of the Emerald City. Jim Vanderweel came to me at our General Assembly in Portland, Oregon, some years ago, and he asked whether my congregation in California would be able to make a gift. I said, "Well, sure, Jim. What you got in mind?" I'm thinking, $1,000? "Well, John," he says in his drawl, "I was thinking $75,000. I just stared at him. "Well, Jim, I'll ask. So I came back and I mentioned the conversation to our finance committee, not exactly warmly received. Most of them just gave me that same blank stare I must have given Jim. And then one man who had this long history, and it often comes down to a connection to a history we have with somebody, jumps up and says, "This is a fantastic idea. Why, we just got this $100,000 bequest. Why don't we give $75,000 of it away?" He pretty much got the same blank stare as I did. But I was never as proud in that congregation as I was some months later when member after member stood in support of that gift. On April 11th, 2011, Francis and I traveled to New Orleans to help dedicate that new building, a building that you can read about in the UU World. It's LEED certified, solar powered. It's a new place. And it happened because not only our church, but so many other churches saw the potential of the Emerald City before them. And we learned, as so many other churches learn, as the Tin Man learned, that it is better to love than just to be loved. Now, of course, all of this was before the Great Recession, wasn't it? Yes, it was. Before we in my congregation, and I'm sure you and yours, had to face the prospect of people losing their jobs, of giving dropping significantly, before we had to let go of half of our church staff in my church, before we realized that our own building in California was so badly in need of maintenance And as the recession continued to take its toll and the new reality of our life set in, we realized it would take a different kind of faith, and we would have to travel again to the land of Oz. My congregation, not unlike yours here, is on the edge of entering the Emerald City again. And that's the point. We're always on the edge of entering the city again, because none of us does this alone, none of us dreams alone, and all of us have the potential collectively to enter the city. You all, of course, remember how Dorothy's journey begins. You follow the yellow brick road. The first step is the hardest. It's tentative at best, impossible at worst. But that's how you do it, one single step at a time. It's true in a congregation. It's true in your life. It's true with each and every one of you. I remember the story, and this will be news perhaps for some of the folks who are new here, of how this building came to be. That was a long yellow road, wasn't it? Those of you who will remember that we met for many years at our beloved fellowship house on Mater Avenue. And then those years at the Rosenstock Hall on Hood College campus with the squeaky seats. It sounded like birds chirping every time everybody got up for a hymn. We thought we'd be there for about 2 years. We were there for six. I remember all the sites that we went to visit before we found this blessed piece of land. Oh, some of them were just choice. I don't know if the building committee remembers the time that we looked at a site that was underneath the power lines in a ditch. This is how desperate we were. Until we went to visit and all the hair stood on the back of our heads and we said, nah, this ain't gonna work. We're not gonna do this. Or the time we looked at a house and thought we could squeeze everybody in. Or the time we went to the Masonic Temple downtown, which looked promising until the Grand Poobah told us that women weren't allowed. And that didn't go over so well. Or my personal favorite, the Baptist Church in Walkersville that was for sale, with its bright white pews and bright red carpeting. And one of our kids who'd come along with the search committee went snooping around and comes running back with eyes as wide as saucers and says, come on, I gotta show you this. And she drags us back to the baptismal immersion tank behind the pulpit and she says, look, they've got a hot tub. I think that was the end of the possibility of that sale. But ultimately, all great decisions come down to the confluence of hopes and dreams. And when I think it was Carolyn Pinnow came across this piece of land and then offered to help finance it, it was here we built. It wasn't what we had planned. It wasn't the way we wanted the road to go. It wasn't the city we thought we saw in our mind's eyes, but it was the one that emerged from this blessed piece of property. I know it's not been easy to build this place. I know it's not been easy to deal with the immense mortgage that I left you with, and I'm hoping that you'll forgive me. I know it's not been easy to find that center. But here's the good news. You stayed. You stayed, you built, you kept going, and now you are on the verge of hiring this young, dynamic Baptist. Oh, it's a slippery slope, friends, I'm telling you. I love it. A Baptist with a Jewish wife. You guys have nailed it. You are on your way. You are on your way. You know, the story is told about Dorothy's journey through Oz. Along the way where she meets her friends' heart and intellect and courage. where she faces the flying monkeys, the wicked witches, the pinching trees, the deep dark forests, the poppies. And she finds her way through it because she is driven by a dream. After it's all said and done, my friends, what drives you is dreaming. What drives any of us is dreaming. We dream that the angels of our better natures will find our way to Oz. We are still dreaming it. You haven't lost the dream. You've been enchanted and will be enchanted again and again because the journey to Oz is not a one-time trip. You go back again and again. Unitarian Universalists, if we can have any theology, could say that ours is a theology of belonging and of dreaming and of being together. And we are all joined together, most of us enchanted agnostics, some of us otherwise, all of us drawn together by this sense that there's something greater we are working towards here. And we are ready to knock again at the gates of Oz. And dreams, far from being just wishful thinking, are actually guiding us to becoming something more than we could ever be alone. Think about the first time you found this place or the church where you go. Think about what drew you in that door. And it's usually a personal trouble or a personal query or a personal desire. And then it gets enveloped by a community and it becomes something more. And all of a sudden, it's not just the sharing of our personal desires, but the creating of a community together. This was the theology of this church, and still remains the theology of this church. This is the theology of Martin Luther King Jr., who had a dream or two. This is what holds us together. But instead of a charlatan wizard behind the curtain, you have this community. You have this sacred space. This is the religion of William Ellery Channing, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Olympia Brown, and all those heroes and heroines that the rooms of this church are named for. This is the church that examines, but more importantly, envelops us into a community. The great Universalist John Murray said, "Give the people something of their vision, and let reality do the rest." We are the church that stands on the shoulders of a great tradition to dream together. Now, it all makes a difference to show up. That's really the bottom line. It makes a difference to show up and be here. The gates to your future aren't just in this church, but outside its doors. We dare to dream together that everything could change, but it's going to be up to us to make it change. I heard a story recently. I don't know if it's apocryphal or real, but it was told to me actually by an Episcopal priest. And he said, "You know, you've heard that there are angels that come to visit us on earth." And I said, "Really?" He said, "Yes, even you Unitarians could entertain this for a minute." He said, "They come and visit, and one in particular was so concerned about what she saw that she went back to her boss and she said, 'You know what? There's trouble down there. This great recession has just taken all the air out of the people. They feel full of despair. They've lost hope. Something must be done.' And so the good Lord thinks about this for a moment and he says, 'Well, you know, I know. I will send a heavenly email to all the great activists out there to get moving and get going.' And so he sends this email. Do you know what it said?" You didn't get one either? I'm sorry for that. Truly I am. You face a new day, my friends. You face a new day where you can be the angels of your better nature, where you can turn this church into what it was always going to be. You've just spent a little time resting. Now it's time to welcome that new minister and to move into the promise of a new Oz. I want to close with a story about how important our religion is and how important your presence here is. I met Roland as he came into my congregation in California as a caregiver for one of the elderly people we have in our church. He is from the Dominican Republic. He's very well spoken. And he told me that he would like to meet with me. So we set up a time. And he'd been there for, three or four months, coming with or without his charge. And he said, "I need to tell you my story." He said, "I grew up as the son of an army colonel in the Dominican Republic. Actually, I grew up in Haiti. And my father and my brother were brutally murdered in front of my eyes by Papa Doc during that terrible time in Haiti. He escaped with his mother and his younger sister across the border into the Dominican Republic and lived there for a year before they managed to make it all the way up to New York City. He went on to go into Boston University, where he has an engineering degree, and worked on early GPS systems. He was one of the first to develop that. But it was such an intense lifestyle, and he was living in Southern California, that he found himself fatigued and wondering what he was doing. His wife, who he had met in Boston and who had come with him to California, had developed cancer, terminal cancer. And so he decided that he would quit his job and spend his time taking care of her, and he did. And he saw her through the end of her life. And he said, "I'm not going back to engineering." And he took some further training and became a caregiver at a salary, a fraction of what he was probably making as an engineer. But then he started having these nightmares. Post-traumatic stress syndrome, probably, going all the way back to his childhood, witnessing the murder of his father and brother, and dealing with the difficult death of his wife. He would wake up in sweats. He was afraid to go to sleep. And then he started coming to our church. He told me that our church saved his life. That once he found that he could be accepted for who he was, without any further theological baggage, without any doctrine test, just who he was, just because he was, just because he was a human being who held a spark of life in his soul, just because of that, he was accepted. And he told me, he said, "The dreams have stopped. The dreams have stopped. My heart is free, and I want to join your church." And he signed the membership book. He made a pledge. And he is a vital part of our community. It makes a difference. It makes a difference to have these doors open. It makes a difference to welcome people, regardless of who they are, where they come from, or what they believe. It makes a difference for us to continue to open the doors of Oz and let people in, my friends. Because you, each one of you, holds the key to coming in and letting others follow. We need more Oz's. It's time for you to get onto Oz. Onto Oz. Amen.